This is the best of Golic and Wingo podcast.
There's a reason I drink as a Raiders fan, and yesterday was just a good reminder of that. Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo, sitting with Mike Golic, Mike Golic Jr. And we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests will join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Guys, let's get straight to some Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. We knew Chris Jones wanted a big deal from the Chiefs, and he made it clear that if he didn't get one, he wasn't going to be comfortable coming into play. And I wasn't sure even yesterday how that would play in a season with COVID-19. And maybe I was just holding on to some little beacon of light, like some little tiny reason for hope. And instead, I get a reminder that the AFC West is going to be a lot like the AFC East has been for the next generation. It looks like one team is going to dominate the rest as the Chiefs find a way to lock up Chris Jones on a big money deal that keeps him with the team for several years. And now they have put basically everything in place, not only this year to come back and repeat, but they've really put the building blocks in place to be dynastic moving forward.
It is truly become, and I think this just solidified what was already pretty firmly in place when you look at the trajectory of the Chiefs offseason. It has become the NFL's own version of Tiger versus the field at this point. And they are so firmly Tiger in a way that makes me kind of want to bet them versus the field.
So let's first give the interior defensive lineman, because that is the premier position in the NFL, mind you guys, his due before we start talking about overall, okay? Can we talk about the man, Chris Jones, the 6'6", 310-pounder that just wreaks havoc in the middle? He's led, and you don't see this an awful lot, led the Chiefs in sacks the last 2 years and as an interior D lineman.
Does that say more about the Chiefs or him?
Yeah, well. See, are you going to do this?
Listen,
are you going
to
do this?
It's my job as an offensive lineman to make sure we undermine the efforts of defensive linemen everywhere.
The four-year deal is worth $80 million. Incentives could get it to $85 million. When he signs the deal, he's due $37 million. When $60 million of it is guaranteed. The dude is just a force inside. And again, sometimes it's not the prettiest thing in the world on the inside. This guy pushes the pocket so well, just starts momentum going one way and rarely is stopped. I mean, outside of, you know, Aaron Donald with his incredible quickness on the inside, Chris Jones is just wreaks havoc in the middle. And we always talk about quarterbacks. Quarterbacks really hate pressure up the gut more than they do on the sides when all of a sudden that trash is around their feet. So I wanted to give that man his due. But to your point, Mike, what the Chiefs have done. So again, Holmes 10-year extension, Jones 4-year contract. 20 of the 22 Super Bowl starters are returning. The entire coaching staff is intact, which is it does say a bit of a bad thing about the NFL, because Eric Bieniemy should be a head coach somewhere. 5 of 6 of top rushers, 8 of 9 top receivers, 6 of 7 top O-line return, and they drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire as well. I mean, it's ridiculous.
I was going to say, they get Thornhill back healthy in the defensive secondary there. Tyrann Mathieu was such a big part of bolstering that entire group. Like, not only those level of bodies, but, like, leaders in key places, guys that they count on, galvanizing forces in a lot of different ways.
And Jason, just to put everybody at ease, what happens in a couple of years when these big contracts kick in, when the people say, well, they're done. They paid their quarterback. He's going to count so much against the cap in a couple of years after he plays through the rest of his rookie year. They got a 2-year window, and then it's shut.
Yeah, that's the alarming thing, because let's remember, they came into this season with only $5 million in cap space.
Yeah.
So people thought they couldn't get this done. If you go to Over the Cap and you look in a couple of years, and I went to 2022 to look when a lot of these numbers start to kick. In 2022, Frank Clark has a number of $26 million, and Tyreek Hill has almost $21 million, and Chris Jones, $22 million. Patrick Mahomes, $31 million. I mean, you're talking huge numbers across the board. And according to overthecap.com, right now, by their projection, the Chiefs will still have $86 million in salary cap space. Like, there isn't a concern. The way these contracts are built, and because the Chiefs hit home runs in the draft. And it was Dan Orlovsky that pointed out on Twitter that since 2011, the 2011 was the last time the Chiefs whiffed on a top three draft pick in the top three rounds. Since 2011, every one of their top three round picks has hit. They draft so stinking well that they're deep, and then they just pay the guys that want to pay, and it works. I mean, their TED talk would be, hey guys, draft well, sign your own, win a Super Bowl. Then they walk off the stage and everybody else sits there and says, it can't be that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's not that easy, because people are, you know, evaluating talent at that level is a difficult proposition there. Certainly being able to structure this and do this early, because a lot of this is making sure that you get to guys and sign them and wrap it up before it gets too late, before we see what's happening in Dallas right now in situations like that. So it is being timely with all that. It's having an eye for it, and it's having trust in your front office then on the back end of all this, saying, all right, we're going to lock up all these positions. We believe that if we find and grow this talent, we're going to pay the hell out of it and make sure it stays in Kansas City and all this. And now it's on you to continue to go out and find and identify talent with an even bigger microscope on you now, because the margins are going to be a little smaller, even though in a couple years we're going to have a chance after next year for guys like Travis Kelce, Tyrann Mathieu, Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz, your all-league right tackle on that, to maybe have to address those deals, to rework that, to maybe move away from some guys in favor of some of those guys you might draft. And so these are all things that put added pressure on a front office that displayed an ability to respond to
it. But it is amazing that, as you just said, even before that 2022, they can address those deals to extend them and drop those. You're talking about the best tight end in the league, or right there, you're talking about, without question, the best right tackle in the league in Mitchell Schwartz. I mean, you're talking about top players who they can redo and extend to knock down their cap, or as Mike said, you know, the dead cap hit on some of them, it wouldn't be too bad at that point.
Here's the amazing part, though. Chris Jones is one of the few names that we talked about as wondering, would he sit out the season potentially? Would they get a long-term deal done and secure the defensive side of the football for them? We're now staring down the barrel of the last one, and we'll get to Dak Prescott in a little bit as we stare down what for the Cowboys has been a 17-month standoff, Something like that, with them. This is interesting going into this season, and it might say as much about the time we're living in as anything. Since 93, Dad, when you guys talked about the franchise tag going into play, the most players to play a full season on the franchise tag is 9, and that's happened twice. We have 13 players left after Chris Jones signed
that are on
the franchise tag. The transition tag
right. Is
also a part of that now. So you look at this situation going to probably smash that number
yep. At
a time where maybe some of it is driven by the financial uncertainty of what's going to come with the virus, with what happens to the cap next year, but an unprecedented time of the use of this particular tool.
Yeah, well, scared money don't make money. As they always say, the Chiefs are looking out saying, hey, we are not going to be scared money out there. They're spending it, and it's going to work.
Golic
makes me want to vomit and then punch you square in the face.
And Wingo.
Oh, he's saucy today.
Had a couple of mega contracts go down yesterday on the defensive side of the ball, and has a lot of people looking around saying, wow, it's Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. Jason Fitz in for Trey Wingo with Mike Golic and Mike Golic Jr. And the money that went out, you just heard about it. A mega deal for the Browns. Obviously, they lock in Myles Garrett, who was only 3 years into his rookie deal. They get that done. Plus, we saw a huge contract for Chris Jones that really sets the Chiefs up to be dynastic moving forward. So to get some insight on it, we're going to head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line. ESPN NFL analyst Lewis Riddick joins us there. Lewis, thanks for your time this morning. We'll start with Myles Garrett. 3 years in, they rip up the deal. They do a new deal, give him a ton of money. What was your reaction when you saw the terms?
Well, it's good to be a pass rusher, isn't it? It's good to be a quarterback hunter. It's good to have, I mean, and Mike Golic, you know about that. I mean, that's how the game is played right now. It's a battle between guys who can pass the ball and put points on the board and the guys who can make those guys who pass the ball uncomfortable. And you got to get as many of them as you possibly can. Myles Garrett is one of the best athletes that this game has seen come into the league in a long, long time. And he obviously has the confidence and has the backing of ownership there in Cleveland, because what they're doing is now, although he has 30.5 sacks in his first 37 games that he's ever played and 32 tackles for loss, there's probably stretches in there where you think Myles Garrett should be giving you even more, given, you know, the height, weight, and speed combination that he has. But what Jimmy Haslam and Dee Haslam, the owners in Cleveland, are doing is they're telling you this. Contracts are supposed to reflect future performance projections. They think that the best is still yet to come for Myles Garrett. So to give him a contract that pays him $25 million plus on an average per year basis is betting on that future. And so right now, I mean, look, the Browns are set up pretty nice on paper. We talked about this a year ago. You know how that goes. And right now, Myles Garrett is getting a lot of paper that is going to be deposited into his bank account. So now we're going to see if he can deliver. But This is huge. It just raises the bar for the rest of the pass rushers that are coming along. If you produce, you can put quarterbacks on their back and make them uncomfortable. You're going to get paid right up underneath there where quarterbacks are getting paid. Obviously, the gap is pretty wide between 25 and 45 plus per year, you know, between Miles and Pat Mahomes. But these guys are being compensated very well for their services, no question.
Just to show you the difference, I go back again to 1993, the first year of free agency. There were 11 of us on the Philadelphia Eagles that were free agents. We all signed somewhere else, and you'll know the comparison when I say the name. Reggie White was the lead dog there, considered the greatest or one of the greatest defensive linemen to ever play. That was the first year of free agency. He signed the deal with the Green Bay Packers. The total amount for the deal was $17 million. The total amount was $17 million. So this is how far it has come, and this is what free agency or the potential. I know he wasn't a free agent, Myles Garrett, but the potential of free agency could be. So I'd say it's working pretty well. And along those lines, Lewis, you see that deal, you see the Mahomes deal, you see the Chris Jones deal, any big name, a number deal. Go to the front office years for you. When a deal is signed like that, what's the thought process of how far in advance the management is looking from a cap sense in the next few years of who's coming up and how this can all be managed?
Yeah, I think the greater amount of certainty you can create for yourself, the better. I mean, obviously, because cap planning is a tough business, man, especially in this environment right now where the 2020 cap, it's hard to project whether it's going to be flat, whether it's going to be down due to the lost revenue here in the year 2020. So you want as much certainty as you possibly can, as you possibly can create around your biggest players, so then you know what you're dealing with going forward. So the longer the contract, the better. Obviously, that's what Dallas is trying to do with Dak Prescott, right? I mean, people say, well, what's the difference between 4 and 5 years? Well, it's a big difference, both in terms of how the money then on to the cap, how your cap is affected, because the more years, obviously, the more signing bonus money you can give and spread it out over the life of the contract, and because then you're able to plan further out into the future. So, I mean, that's what you're always trying to weigh. Obviously, players are trying to get their contracts front-loaded as much as possible, so you're trying to make them happy as well. At the end of the day, what you're trying to do is you don't want to be totally satisfied with what you negotiate, because then you know on the other end the player is going to be ticked off. And the player at the same time is always, you know, ideally you're going to probably be, you know, you want to ideally be in a situation where you feel good about what you sign, but at the same time knowing that you left a little bit of it on the table too for the benefit of the team, because it is a team game. So I think that's what from a front office standpoint, that's what you're trying to manage, and that's what you're trying to balance. You're trying to get as much certainty as you can for your team, take care of your players, and just make sure that you can remain competitive and not throw your salary cap all out of whack. And, I mean, obviously the Chiefs are doing a great job with that, with the way they structured Pat's contract and with the subsequent effect it had on their ability to get Chris Jones done, you know, very quickly, although they were working on both of those deals at the same time. And now, I mean, Cleveland's trying to do that too. They have their premier pass rusher locked up and in place. Now they can continue to just, you know, work on the rest of the roster. They had a big free agency period. They did a good job in the draft. We'll see what Baker Mayfield can deliver for him. I mean, this is front office work 101. And, you know, it's all good right now, but you know how this goes. Once the season starts, it can all, you know, you're hoping it all pans out the way you want it to, and things don't just blow up on you.
And all we can do is try and judge that objectively on what the moves are, because you're right. At some point, it becomes the players and the coaches then and what they're able to do. But, Lewis, you just said it there. It's front office 101, but when a team like the Chiefs makes it look so easy, or what the Ravens have done this offseason, or any of these great NFL franchises that we've seen, I'm curious on the other side, what's the biggest mistake that teams make in the front office in that vein that leaves so many other teams scrambling, trying to play catch-up and doing things that ultimately set their franchise back so much?
Yeah, Mike, I think the most important part of roster building, without a doubt, is the development and utilization part of the three-phased approach. And by three-phased, I mean this. Obviously, there's scouting and evaluation that goes on for the first third of the year. And then there's valuation and procurement, meaning you actually put a price on people, and then you wind up trying to get them, whether it's through free agency or the draft. Now, obviously, that's very important. It's very important for you to value players properly in terms of how much money you pay them. So you have to have good salary cap people, and you have to have guys who can negotiate good contracts, and you have to have guys who have the connections to go out and get these players and be able to make these deals with the agents. But the most important part, and I think this is where the great teams separate themselves from the rest, is developing these players and utilizing them in real time on game day. You know, how many times have we seen examples of teams that look great in the offseason where we do all these shows or you write all these articles about who won the offseason, give them this grade, give them that grade, give them this grade. They drafted well. They signed in free agency well. And then at the end of the football season, we're going, what the hell happened? Well, the development, both on and off the field, utilization of these players in real time in game situations, third down, 2 minute red zone, all the stuff we talk about that's fun during the season, that's where people separate themselves. It just is. It happens all the time. Because otherwise, how could you explain players going from one place and looking one way, going to another place and looking another way? It's not just simply because the player goes, well, I didn't like it there and I wanted to play harder here. It usually has something to do with the fact that how he's being developed, how he's being taught, how he's being corrected, and how he's being utilized in real time is better and more efficient than what it was at the last place. And that's where teams separate themselves. That's what Bill is a master at up in New England. That's what Andy Reid is a master at down in Kansas City. That's what Doug Peterson has done well. That's what Sean McVay is doing well. That's what Mike Tomlin does well. All the usual suspects, that's where they start putting some distance between the rest of the pack.
Let's go look and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're talking to ESPN NFL analyst Lewis Riddick. Don't forget, Chiefs GM Brett Veach managed to lock his franchise players on both sides of the ball in. That's the MVP moment of the week brought to you by Sport Clips. It's a new season at Sport Clips Haircuts. All stylists, clean certified, and guy smart, Sport Clips. So, Lewis, you said Dak's name earlier, and I want to go back and get your front office thoughts on it because you mentioned it's not as simple as 4 years or 5 years. When you are a team like the Cowboys that has built your roster for so much success and your alternative is a shorter contract with Dak or possibly having to go back into the draft to find a new quarterback, because that's the inevitability at some point, how does the quarterback position specifically, knowing that your other option is having to dip back into the draft, how does that affect you in a negotiation?
Yeah, it can affect you tremendously, Jason. I mean, it can make you go above and beyond what your limit that you had set for yourself from a salary cap planning and from a contract negotiating standpoint. It can make you go above and beyond that in ways that you didn't anticipate when you're sitting there meeting about, okay, how are we going to go into these negotiations? Where are we going to draw the line? When are we going to walk away from the table? Because when you start looking down in the gun barrel, so to speak, and thinking, well, what is the next best alternative? Where do we go if we don't get this done? It can scare people, and that's the leverage game that you play. That's how quarterbacks are able to, more times than not, really dictate the terms of contracts, especially when you're talking about good franchise quarterbacks like Dak Prescott is. Dallas right now seems to be willing to go ahead and play this game. Jerry Jones is one of the most fearless negotiators, you know, in business and in sports overall anyway. So he's saying, hey, look, you know what? We'll pay you $31 million this year. Next year, you may have us in a bad spot. You may have us in a very bad spot, meaning can we afford to franchise tag you again at $39 million plus? Or do we have to let you hit free agency where you're going to absolutely, you know, just clean up? You're going to have a lot of cash coming to you. And if we do have to franchise you again, you're going to stand to make just short of $70 million in 2 years in terms of cold, hard cash in your pocket. That's the game you play, man. I mean, that's why salary cap management is as tough as it is. That's why team building is as tough as it is in the salary cap era, because these are the decisions that you're going to have to make. And when quarterbacks have you in these kind of situations, it makes you really have to sit there and remind yourself, look, there's a reason why it's called salary cap planning. It's not, you know, you just can't blow up all of your preconceived and rather your pre-planned ideas about how you're going to build the football team. And you just can't throw discipline out the window simply because, you know, quarterbacks tell you, or rather you feel as though that position is so important that you have to do it that way. Because it can have an adverse effect on everything else that you're doing. It just can. But, you know, that just means that they may be back to square one trying to figure out what is our plan at quarterback going forward. And that's why it's good to be Dak right now. Look, I don't cry for Dak. Dak's in a good spot. He is in a very good spot. He's taking some short-term risk. He's assuming some short-term risk. But ask Kirk Cousins how that turned out for him. He's a very, 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 very rich man right now, because he bet on himself. He made a lot of money. A lot of money.
Lewis, as always, we appreciate your insight, my friend. Thanks for coming on with us. Stay safe. Thanks for joining
us. You got it, guys. All right.
I mean, again, he talks about management and or coaching and how you develop talent that maybe isn't too good. It's on the coaches, or it's good talent that isn't developed by the coaches. Miles Garrett, again, he'll be the – they have not had a – it'll go into a second contract as a rookie. They haven't had that happen since 2010 in Joe Haden. From the six drafts in 2011 to 2016, not one of those first rounders had a second contract.
Yeah, I mean, and,
that's
and,
horrible.
And, well, and I mean, and part of that is you're also your scouting going into that. Are you exactly. overvaluing guys yes. that you're taking in the first round? Because development wise, man, you look at Miles Garrett and go, man, just don't screw that up. But as we've constantly seen, whether it was the Seahawks when they had their success back around 2012, the Patriots eternally, it's, all right, what are these undrafted guys that I'm taking and all of a sudden turning into starters? Who am I all of a sudden creating that value with?
Golic and Wingo.
It was all sort of one big giant yeah. jello mold. It's very interesting where that went.
Will we not? We don't know yet. But every day gets us at least closer to trying to figure it out when it comes to college football, which ultimately also will impact, of course, the NFL. Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN, Jason Fitz and Petray, sitting with Mike Golic Jr. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all of our guests join us on the Shell Penzo Performance Line. It feels like a daily question we'll be asking for the next several weeks is where are we on the scope of college football? And it's an important question because, frankly, conferences are waiting as long as possible. We've been talking about that. They're taking as much time to get as much information as they can to make these decisions, largely because the information consistently changes. The only consistency right now that we have in 2020 is that the information will consistently change. So they're trying to get as much info as they can, guys. And there's not – whatever the solution is, I think we have to at least step back and say, I'm glad I'm not the one making the decision because this is incredibly complicated.
Well, because there is no one making the decision, which is part of the incredibly complicated problem
Fair.
In college sports. But only look to what the NFL and pro leagues are dealing with right now and realize all the decisions being made in college are tied to, all right, financially, what are we going to be able to stomach? And remember a while back – when we heard all these ADs and people talking about, well, we think we can get stadiums up to this capacity and do this, that, and the other. Well, what we just saw in Philadelphia, them basically saying, no, there's going to be no people in the stands for Phillies games, for Eagles games. Well, Temple also plays in Philadelphia, so take that as another school that's got to cross off. All right, any fan-related income for the season, gone. So you have those changing finances constantly working their way into a picture that's not going to be clear anytime
yeah,
soon.
Yeah, we have no answers yet, again, from the Power 5. It's just the Big Ten and the Pac-12 who have said just conference play. We're still waiting on the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC, you know, on what they're going to do. But I think as we look at it, we came in initially going, okay, players are going to come in June to start to work out. And we were like, oh, my God, look at all the positive tests. When I don't think we should have been as shocked at that point because you were bringing in players from all across the country. To me, it was almost that second round of testing. You look at a place like Oklahoma where Lincoln Riley had said, you know, let's even wait to bring players in. Their initial run, they had 14 players test positive when they brought them back in. The second round of 89 tests had no positive tests. So to me, you're bringing the guys in from all across the country. You're going to get some positive tests. But now the college game, like the NFL and like Major League Baseball, is basically open to everything, right? There's no bubble like in the NHL, like in the Women's Soccer League, like in the NBA and like in the MLS. So they're going to be exposed to campus life if students come back. They're going to be exposed to that city where they hang out in the college. And then you're going to see where it goes from there. But to me, it is about the second round and the third round of testings that if you start to control the COVID outbreak, and then but the risk then is when they go out to a restaurant or go out to a college bar or something, what do they come back with? That's why testing is going to be so important. But as Lincoln Riley has also said, some way, shape, or form, I think we're going to play football, but the some way, shape, or form is anywhere from regular season to push the season to conference play to spring football. So, you know, every option still remains on the table.
And there are some complications through all of it. I know Junior has mentioned several times the concept of spring football. Well, Heather Dinich talked about that yesterday on SportsCenter with Kevin Negandhi, and the toughest part of it.
The biggest issue that the commissioners have talked to me about is the simple fact that nobody has any idea if the spring season will be any better than what we're staring at right now. That's a major concern. Bob Boolsby told me that if it were to be played, it would probably be March, April, May. That means workouts would be January, February, which coincides in flu season. There's just no guarantee that the health conditions will be any better or any safer. And then obviously you have the concerns of the NFL draft and the wear and tear on the players bumping into that 2021 season.
Yeah, it's a value proposition here. It's all right, what is that time worth and the information we can gather in that time period? Because Chris Hummer at 24/7 Sports wrote an article on, well, the NFL hasn't announced any plans to move their calendar, so you have top prospects potentially choosing between playing a season and potentially then playing two inside a calendar year in a way that butts up too much. The combine hasn't been talked about being moved at all yet. Like, those guys wouldn't play, and that one seems obvious. Like, if you're hanging on that Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields or any of those guys would play, if we had a spring season, it's ridiculous. It's how far down does the draft chart go where players decide to say, I'm not, if I got a fourth round grade, am I going to risk it? Am I going to go out there in a time where information's already at a premium and I might be in a better spot with the way the people are trying to evaluate me are going? Am I really going to risk that to go and blow out my hamstring playing college football where I'm unpaid?
I'll just play devil's advocate to that because I agree with you, but there's the side of going into last season, where was Joe Burrow projected? Third round, fourth round, became the number one overall pick because of the year he had. So there is going to be just for there are those guys. And I agree with you. You're not Trevor Lawrence. I mean, seriously. I mean, why would this guy play? I mean, there would be no, unless he's just saying, you know, I want to play or try to win a national championship. And if he doesn't play, just think of the shockwave of the fact that Clemson's one of the favorites to win the national championships. Now you don't have the best quarterback in the country playing for you. That's going to happen. But on the other side of it, I do think you're going to see players who feel like they can improve their stock by playing, even though there is the risk of, okay, then I go in the draft and I start the season. But that money that I can make by jumping up a couple of rounds would be well worth it. So you'll get some on that side. But I agree, you'll get some of the top guys saying, there is no shot I'm doing this.
I think the one thing, though, there's so many teams that would be affected by that. If you're a college football fan, you just want to see college football.
That's exactly right.
And it doesn't matter. Like, if Trevor Lawrence isn't playing, well, neither is Justin Fields likely, right? So it's going to hit everybody much the same. The large programs are all going to be hit where their biggest stars are gone. So now it's the rest of my roster versus the rest of your roster. And for a lot of the college football community, as long as they're wearing the helmets, then that's all people care about.
And I think this could be one of those situations where smaller programs, unfortunately, might be adversely affected by this, because if you're a guy who's a top quality draft prospect on a group of five school who's not going to win a national championship or do anything of the like, well, all right, what is really my incentive to go out there, even if I am further down on a draft board like that? So it's going to affect those groups, but unfortunately, when college football makes decisions at large, it very rarely makes them with those groups in mind. I'm in line with Fitz. It is about every move that college football made has been about giving itself time to make the decision. Spring football is just the largest version of that decision. It's all just about giving time. So I understand Heather's point. There's no guarantees, but there haven't been any guarantees in all of this. It's just been about buying time to make sure that we can ensure the golden goose lives.
What do we say about guarantees in Tommy Boy?
It's got to be your bull. I can get a great look at a butcher by stick. Okay.
And you're usually great at these, too.
I intentionally mess that up. I want you to know that.
Okay.
Coming up, Chris Jones got his long-term deal. Will another franchise tag player get his? We'll ask that after this.
Teed it up for you. Teed it right up there for you.
I only know fat guy in a little coat. Like, that's the only
I knew you weren't. That was on my son.
Are you really questioning the fact that I knew the quote? If I want to get a good look at a T-bone, I can stick my head up a bull's, but I better take the butcher's word for it. I know the quote. Come on. I need everyone to walk arm in arm with me one time into the Reference Hall of Fame. Come live in the offensive line room where the Fats have dominated this field for years. You and Chris Jones over there with your great athletic bodies and working around doing things. We've been over here with guts and sweat, having to live on personalities and wit for years. Walk with me for 5 minutes, man.
Weird hill to die on.
Sounds like you're deflecting.
I tell you what, a great sports night last night, yeah. No doubt about it.
And Wingo.
What a day, what a show, what a time.
One, two, three, four.
Mike Golic Jr. just basically took a sledgehammer to a tiny spider.
There was an ant or a spider crawling.
No, it was a spider, and it's a big one.
It's a big one. Ridiculous, crawling toward Mike, and he got up and booted it because thinking it was going to attack you. It's a million times smaller than you.
It was coming right at me, and so I thought I could sit there and I could let it assert its dominance, or I could get up and remind it who daddy is.
The fact that you're so proud of it now really makes me rethink.
It's like, over there stunned. It has no idea what to do.
Oh, no, it's dead.
No, it's not dead for anyone listening. It's definitely not dead. It's just stunned.
Okay. I'm
it's nicely napping over there.
I really thought all these years I could run my mouth in any bar as long as I had you next to me because you'd catch my back. Now I'm seeing that.
You see what I did?
Yeah,
you see how I protect you, Jason?
I don't know.
Well.
I'm a little weirded out by it.
There's no doubt Rachel Nichols just hung up.
Rachel's out.
I'm so sorry, Rachel.
Rachel's like, I thought it couldn't get any worse than the bubble. Now I'm dealing with these idiots.
She's done.
Let's go to the Shell Penzo Performance Line where we're joined by Rachel Nichols of The Jump. Rachel, I'm sorry. Spidergate had to take over the beginning of this. But
how are you, Rachel?
Dude, I've been trapped in my room for 3 or 4 days now into the 7-day quarantine I'm in. This is entertainment for me. Keep going. I got nothing.
I'm telling you,
I got nothing,
Rachel,
else.
You're better off than the spider right now. So all good.
You mentioned, for anyone that doesn't know, you're in Orlando and you're at the beginning of the quarantine process now, almost to the halfway point. So walk me through a little bit of what this is mentally like to come in and then be so quarantined and really be so isolated in Orlando.
I mean, obviously, it's just something that not only I have never stayed in one room for 7 straight days. And I just, you know, when they were first telling us about this, I was like, right, but you guys are going to let us like have an hour to like walk around outside, right, or something. And it was no. And then it was like, well, you can go walk to get, you'll be like escorted to go walk to get your daily COVID test because you need to have 7 negative results in a row before they let you out into the bubble. And then when we got here, they said, actually, we've changed the procedure. The tester is just going to come to you. So that's it. You are in the room for 7 straight days. I've never experienced this before. Sunlight does not, you know, make its way onto my skin. And you just hang out. You start to kind of lose all sense of time. I'm a terrible, like, night owl anyway. So now it's, you know, now all bets are off. All permission is granted, right? Because the clock is almost irrelevant. And you just do it.
We're going to get into what you're doing to pass the time because we've talked to Malika Andrews and she was in your position and Mark Spears, who has a real issue going on with his video game system right now. But as far as what's going on in the bubble, it all seems, Rachel, I mean, I know we had a couple of guys inadvertently do things wrong and got re-quarantined, but it all does seem to be, or is that what, at least what you're hearing, at least from the outside looking in, the bubble seems to be working right now.
It is. And, you know, they've had a couple positive tests, even once guys got here, too, to be in specific. But that is, again, in the system, like in the net of that they designed. They sort of designed these multiple layers of a bunch of testing of these guys when they were back in their home markets in the 2 weeks leading up to coming here. And the idea of that is if guys just were walking around with it and didn't know it, they could get isolated and start to get treated if they needed to or anything like that. And then also to just make sure when you were getting guys on the plane, you weren't putting positive guys on the plane with other guys. 2 of the 300 plus players sort of netted out of coming in with it on the plane. And we know the way this virus works now, it can be, you know, you could have been infected 3 or 4 days ago and have a positive test not show up for a few days. So that is likely what happened. But they were tested here, and while they were still within their single room quarantine, those positive tests were identified. And then since then, they've certainly not reported that they've had any. So, you know, knock, knock on every piece of wood until the day the last ball drops, you know, through the hoop in the last day of the NBA Finals. But for right now, things seem to be working, and that giant rule book that you guys played Malika talking about in the intro is there for a reason. Seems like it's working so far.
Rachel Nichols with us here on Golic and Wingo, and working so far is probably the operative term. We know we've got to wait, but in general, I'd imagine there's a fair amount of anxiety going into this situation for everyone, and I'm curious from the players you've talking to people that have been down there already, have the normalcy of basketball starting to take place again helped dissipate any of that?
Yeah, I think for sure. I think this is, you know, this is what everybody has done every day for their entire lives. And the fact that you're getting to get back into it, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, whether you're an athletic trainer, you know, this is what you do. And especially if you're a basketball player, it's such a big part of your identity, right? Who's he? Oh, he's a Milwaukee Bucks player, right? Who's he? Even just in your neighborhood when you were growing up, who's he? Oh, he's that player who does this. Being a player, being a basketball player, is who these guys are. It's the reason why a lot of times when they retire, there's that year of sort of crashing and depression that a lot of players have, because who they are is just intrinsically changing. And I think for these 4 months, a lot of these guys haven't been able to be who they are in the world, and now they can start to be that again. And that is really, from a mental health standpoint, helping while they still manage the obvious physical health and issues that are coming up here.
It's Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio. We're talking to Rachel Nichols from The Jump. She's down in Orlando in the bubble. And so, Rachel, you mentioned some of the practice and the element of getting guys back together. When you start looking at the fact that players haven't been able to practice themselves in some instances, not just as teams, what kind of basketball are you expecting when we actually see guys get back onto the court for these games?
I mean, it's not going to be great, but also sometimes that can be pretty entertaining. I'll give you the Washington Wizards this past season were not good at playing basketball, largely, which is a shame because that is what they're supposed to be doing. But they were wildly entertaining. I think one of the scores of their games was something like 160-something to 150-something. I mean, there are versions of basketball that, while not clinical displays of the beautiful sport as it should be, are still fun. And I do think that's what we're going to see. I think that there will be a lot of sort of fun moments. I think that these guys will appreciate playing in a way they might not have as a random game in March if those games had continued. And I think that while there will certainly be some teams in these first 8 seeding games that they're going to have that will be sort of, you know, biding their time for the playoffs or doing the things that we always see like elite teams doing in the final 8 games, right? They're kind of resting players. They're not, you know, they're maybe playing for seeding, that kind of thing. There is going to be a scrap among sort of the middle and lower teams, both for seeding in the Western Conference, where a team like the Houston Rockets could finish as high as 3rd or finish as low as 7th, which is going to make a huge difference in who they play. And to get into the playoffs, we know in the West, they've got 5 teams here that could make that final slot. We could have a play-in game, which we've never had in the NBA before. So I think there's going to be a lot, even if it's not going to be, at least at the beginning, the most elite level of conditioning and gameplay. And I think you will see a lot of funny, stupid, crazy stuff. But who says that's not fun?
Rachel Nichols joining us, brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. It's road trip season. Get ready with 5-Hour Energy. So, Rachel, you're down there. We talked to Malika Andrews when she was where you are now, being quarantined, and she said she Zoomed with family members and played Scramble. We talked with Mark Spears, who, outside of the vat of wine he brought with him, he forgot a cord to his gaming system, so he's bummed about that. That was to bide his time. What are you going to do to bide your time as you're waiting?
I brought a puzzle that I think I have to just admit I may have bit off more than I can chew. I started that with a glass of wine two nights ago. All right, so I was like, let's go in theme, right? I'm coming down to Disney, and I got a puzzle of the Disney villainesses, right? So all the, like, female villains from Disney movies are in a puzzle. And I was like, this is perfect. I'm going to be locked in my room for 7 days. Like, this will be a great way to, like, just sort of unplug and like, have my brain work in a different way. And it turns out I'm not that good at puzzles, guys. That's just what I have to admit about myself. So I've done some at home, like with my I have young children, but I got maybe some false confidence there, because those puzzles, it turned out, were 4, 7, and 8-year-olds. And then when I had an adult grown-up puzzle, it's not good. It's just not good.
Self-realization can be a tough thing, huh, Rachel?
It really can. You've got to, like, just come to terms with who you are in the world. And this has been a little bit of a come down for me. I'm not going to lie.
Rachel, I still believe in you. I believe that you're going to have an 11th hour awakening where in the middle of the night you're going to wake up and the puzzle's all going to make sense. The whole thing's going to come together, and it will be your great triumph of the fall.
Be so, a great moment.
There we go. Rachel, appreciate you coming on, and most importantly, stay safe. We genuinely appreciate your insight from the bubble, and love that you're down there, but obviously stay safe, and we appreciate you coming on.
thank you. Thank you so much to you guys. And I just want to say, be the not the first nor the last person to say how much I've appreciated this show and everybody who works on it. And as the ESPN radio goes through its metamorphosis, I'm just really grateful and appreciative for all the time everyone on the show has put in.
Thanks, Rachel. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Rachel. We appreciate it.
Go Look and Wingo, presented by Progressive Insurance. I'm telling you, I'm not betting against Rachel. She's going to wake up in the middle of the night.
I need updates on this puzzle now. I'm invested.
Without question. I'd like to see who all the villainesses are, too. I'd like to know who
there's
they all
are. There's some powerhouses in there.
There is.
You go back to, like, the Cruella de Vil days.
Well, and I got to believe the Cruella de Vil, that's got to be the easier one with the hair, right? I mean, you got to be able to tell those pieces of her hair.
So you've got Cruella de Vil. You've got who's the one from The Little Mermaid? What's her name?
I don't know her name.
We'd have to go. We got to find out from her again. We'll
is Maleficent a is that Disney movie? Is Maleficent a Disney movie?
Yes, would Maleficent she be in that is one? A Disney movie.
So she would. So. I mean, so she would probably be in that one. I don't know her name because I haven't seen that movie yet. But Disney Plus and stuff.
But how about her with the false sense of security of doing the kid puzzles and all of a sudden getting an adult one and just getting hammered?
There's a different, like, man, there's levels to this puzzle game, man. You know, this mom's into puzzles. Like, those things will humble you quickly.
We are, listen, she's got 13 days to finish it. So we got to find out what's going on with this puzzle.
Speaking of getting hammered after yesterday's news, I think I'm going to spend the next 10 years just getting hammered on Sundays.
Golic.
Golic and Wingo.
And Wingo.
Mm-hmm. Trey Wingo and Mike Golic Sr.
I'm going to give you a couple of options. You're going to decide whether either, neither, or both of them are true. Either, neither, or both. We'll get a long-term deal done this week. Shaq Barrett, Yannick Ngakoue.
Oh, neither. It's not happening. I mean, this week, you mean today.
Today.
Those are two guys that are tagged. They're not getting deals done, and they'll play on their now, neither one of them has signed their tenders, right?
No, so three players haven't signed their one-year tender. A.J. Green from the Bengals, Yannick Ngakoue, and Shaq Barrett. So all three have been selected to Pro Bowls at some point during their career. None of them have signed their franchise tender, but long-term deal is the question, Jason.
Yeah, I'm going neither, and that's really largely on Ngakoue, who has made it clear on social media he wants nothing to do with the Jags. I don't know how you walk back some of the things he said about the organization. So then it comes down to Shaq Barrett, and it just if they were going to get a deal done, I think they already would have in that situation.
Yep, sounds like they're going to make Shaq Barrett go out there and prove it again. Worth noting in all this pass rusher conversation, too, that this has become a very different exercise for me in Chandler Jones Appreciation Week in here what an absolute mutant that guy has been. We'll have more on that one later as this goes along here. I'm going to go neither as well with you guys. Jason, either, neither, or both will finish in the top 10 at Memorial. Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods.
Both. And it's simple.
Ooh.
I need nice things. Like, these are the things
so this is selfish.
This is totally selfish. Like, I need a situation where both these guys are riding into it on Sunday. Both are right in the thick of it. So, I need this, all right? I don't ask for much.
I want both so badly. So badly. Haven't decided if I'm going to pick them in my DraftKings 6 just yet. I want them, but I'm going to say neither.
I'm going to go either, and I'm going to go Tiger on this one. I think the layoff coming off the injury, the only sample size we've really seen from him was that bit from the match where he was dialed in.
It's true, he was. You
lacing
know
it out there.
Maybe you're going to talk me into either and Tiger. Even though it was his home, basically his home course.
Works out pretty well in that regard. And he got to wear shorts, too, which we can't put a value on that one. Either, neither, or both, Dad, will be on their current team in 2021. Aaron Jones, Derrick Henry, both set to be free agents after this year.
Oh, boy. Derrick Henry's not getting that long-term deal. I think so because, you know what, there's just not a market out there for running backs. There's just not a big market there. So I think I'm going to say both. Both, are going to be on their teams.
Jason?
There are so many running backs coming in next year between the draft and the NFL that could be eligible and free next summer. I will say either. And I'm going to actually go with Derrick Henry, ends up back with the Titans. I think they'll find a way to keep him there. But I think Aaron Jones, at this point, Matt LaFleur's offense, I think he believes he can put a plug and play back in there at some point. So there's so many backs in the draft, too, that are going to be good. That plays into it.
See, I think everything we've described is a market suppressor for running backs, and we're seeing that. Unless you're Christian McCaffrey, who's basically getting treated like the Patrick Mahomes of running backs, there's probably not much in your future. So I'm going to say both, just because both of these franchises value the run in that way. We know Mike Vrabel loves that. This is a style that fits their fight. And then with Aaron Jones on the other side, I think LaFleur wants to go is a more rushing-based offense. And Aaron Jones, one of the more criminally underappreciated backs that we've seen in I don't know how many years, it seems like we're still shouting, free Aaron Jones. Either, neither, or both, Dad, the Lakers won't win the title because they are without either, neither, or both, Avery Bradley, Rajon Rondo.
Wow. They won't win the title. Rajon Rondo, either.
Okay, either, Jason?
Neither. If they're going to win a title or not win a title, it's because of Anthony Davis and LeBron, not because of any guard play. Either, neither, or both. Which one of these dogs is going to stop giving you a bath is the
Yeah, I'm going to say it's the impressive job of almost sitting here like you're working the strings on marionettes as these pugs just
giving
clean
them something
your fingers.
To do.
That's what you got to do. You got to give them a little bit to get a little bit more. Either, neither, or both. Snubbed by Madden for not getting a 99 rating. Justin Tuck, Khalil Mack, Jason.
Either Khalil Mack. I think we've just become so blasé to the greatness that is Khalil Mack. He doesn't get the love that he deserves.
Dad?
He's a 99.
Khalil Mack does not get the love that he deserves. There's no doubt about that.
You guys are really going to go away. Justin Tucker is a weapon at kicker. I'm sorry, Justin Tucker is the one, and I rarely go to bat for specialists for all the obvious reasons. Justin Tucker should be a 99. If anyone is consensus the best at what they do,
You want a kicker to be not have a 99
yes,
rating.
Yes, Justin Tucker deserves a 99 in all this one.
All right,
either, neither, or both could sell a ketchup popsicle to a woman wearing white gloves. Tommy Boy, Big Tom Callahan.
Oh, Big Tom Callahan.
Both.
No. I'm going to say, even after the show Tommy put on, he sold 500,000
white
pads.
Yeah, he did, but he started out. I mean, it was a big learning curve where Big Tom Callahan was the man right out of the gate. So right out of the gate, you give me one chance, one time, Big Tom.
Your subtle flex, too, that you came up with that off the top of your head.
This has been the best of Golic and Wingo podcast. You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or just ask your smart speaker to play Golic and Wingo. Plus, you can check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN News.